The only other thing I was going to say, I think there's a certain amount of, if I can put it, lack of understanding about the whole issue of the settlements, because people say, well, with all these settlements, it's impossible to have two states. It's forgotten, let me just give you the basic facts. Number one, the settlements physically, the settlements occupy less than 1% of the West Bank. Number two, large numbers of settlers, according to some polls, as many as 60%, they went to live in the occupied Palestinian territories, not for ideological reasons, but for financial reasons. The settlements were subsidized by the Israeli state. So about 60%, according to some polls, say, if you give us sufficient compensation in the state of Israel, then we're willing to pack up our bags and go back to Israel. Now, it is true that there are some fanatical settlers. Oh, I should add, there's the third thing, which is there can be a land swap, one-to-one, equal value, equal size land, between a small percentage of the West Bank, say 1 or 2% of the West Bank, and 1 or 2% of the land abutting the Gaza Strip. What's called a land swap of minor and mutual border adjustments. Now, it is true there is a core of fanatical settlers, but even there, it's kind of exaggerated. So you take the case of the most fanatical of the settlers, maybe the ones in Hebron. They're crazies, most of them neighbors of mine from Brooklyn, New York. And so you have, some of you know Hebron, Al-Khalil. You have 400 crazy settlers living in Hebron with 120,000 Muslims in Hebron. Hebron is predominantly overwhelmingly Muslim city. So, is it a problem? It's not really a problem. All you have to do is to say to those 400 settlers sitting in living in H1 or H2, I always forget which one. In Hebron, just say to those 400 settlers, look, guys and gals, you want to stay, you can stay. But we, meaning the Israeli army, we're leaving. So, if you 400 settlers want to stay with 120 settlers, you can stay. Now, maybe some of you are from Hebron. Hebronites are known to be very stubborn. You don't want to stay with 120 settlers. And the whole problem of Hebron will be resolved literally in the blink of an eye. These are not so unresolvable problems. It requires political will. The Israeli government doesn't want to do it. But if the Israeli government were determined that it was going to end the settlements, it's what former Israeli security chiefs said. When they were asked about the settlers, you know what they said? They said, all we have to do is treat them for a few hours the way we treat the Palestinians, and they'll be gone very quickly.
Ushers to pass out some donation and membership cards, just in case any of you here care about the work that we're doing and want to partner with us and support financially the work that we're doing. We'll continue with two more questions. As Dr. Finkelstein said, this is the first time ever where we had to organize a second lecture. And believe it or not, the second lecture as well is sold out. So it's so grateful to see more and more people really care to know more about what's going on, and they really want to be informed. And please, I really encourage you, consider supporting CGPNE to enable us to continue to do our work. If you decide to support our work, you can give by check, by credit card. We just ask you to fill out that membership donation card. And if you do, just put a check mark on the envelope so our volunteers automatically know that this is your support. I thank you very much, and we will continue. If you don't mind, two more questions. I'd love Dr. Finkelstein to answer everyone's but out of respect for the people who are waiting outside for the next session. So we'll take two questions, and I have two quick announcements, and that will be it. Thank you.
Wait, are we starting from this side?
No, yeah, I'm sorry.
We
did
this
side, right?
That's
not where your side of you do.
First, we did this side.
So we have to do this side. I'm sorry. It's this side, two questions. Please go ahead.
If you can forgive me for bringing up Dershowitz. Just wondering if you could say something about the effect of the incident between the two of you on campus activism. Just because, from a campus activist point of view, you're so obviously and uncontroversially right, and it didn't matter, and that's kind of scary. So, just wondering if you could give words of encouragement and support.
Thank you. And sir, please ask your question.
With the upcoming Republican most likely win in Tuesday's election, do you see any possibility that might precipitate Israel's encouragement to do something against Lebanon or Syria sooner, knowing Obama has his plate point full and you know the practice with the Tea Party and everything like that?
On the question of Professor Dershowitz, I don't really comment much on it in recent years. It's just a peculiarity of most cultures that at some point some individuals, they become a character on the national stage. And when you become a character on the national stage, it no longer makes a difference whether whatever you're saying is true or not true. People just don't care. It's just he's an interesting or she's an interesting figure. And so you just interview them, and it's completely beside the point whether what the person is saying is factually accurate or inaccurate. And it's, you know, for those people who have any kind of sort of like minimal belief in notions like truth, it is a kind of disconcerting phenomenon. So you'll still see Professor Dershowitz reviewing books in the New York Times book review. Now, whenever there is a topic bearing, a news item bearing on the Israel-Palestine conflict, all the reporters, they rush to him for an opinion. And I think some of the reporters are fully aware that there's only a tenuous relationship between what he says and reality, but nobody cares. And that's the thing that's really kind of odd. I know we're rushed for time, but just allow me just a brief anecdote. When I first appeared on the Democracy Now! With Professor Dershowitz, I was kind of astonished. I know many people here will be surprised by my naivete, but I was just astonished at the facility with which he lied. It really kind of amazed me. And, you know, when you're growing up, at least when I was growing up, you always heard thrown around the expression that he or she is a pathological liar. And this was the first time in a clinical sense, not in a pejorative sense, in a clinical sense, they observed a pathological liar because he had an exceptional ability to absolutely believe in what he was saying, absolutely believes it,